Alright, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Alright, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Rich, can you just go suck it? So you got her pregnant, huh?
That's kind of fucking weird, but okay.
Big O! Showtime!
When you were making it for young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the show link, go direct to DLNTS.org. And IC channels and LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Good evening and welcome to episode 817 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy summer.
We have Joe.
Hello, hello.
And Minix is hanging around over there.
Hey, guys.
So we were talking right before the show started about Synergy and that there is a fork of Synergy called Barrier. Which Barrier has Wayland support, right, Joe?
Actually, I'm not sure on the Wayland support. We were just looking at it because I had remembered hearing about the fork, which it forked from the version that of Synergy that's been in the repos for ever since Synergy itself was open source before they closed everything. And I don't know much about it.
Right. Okay. So, I'll try and find out whether it does have DNF support, DNF support, Wayland support. But we were talking about that, and so Barrier is available on Ubuntu. Looking at Disco Dingo, shows that version 2.1.2. plus DFSG-1 is available, but it's not available in Fedora nor with Fedora Fusion, not Fedora Fusion, just a few RPM Fusion repos enabled. I don't see it when I'm doing a DNF search, but Joe found a Flatpak, and there's steps on building the Flatpak, which was brought me asking the question, you got to enable the flathub.org repo for flat packages. And I was like, no, you know, I'm not that familiar with Flatpak, so I don't know anything next to Flathub, you know, whether that's considered a legitimate repo or one of those repos that you're like, you know, it's kind of risky how well that is. But anyway, what came around to, and I was just about to talk about and say, I was saying that I feel like weird using Flatpak to run an application like Synergy. And Joe, your comment to that was what?
Well, I was just wondering, between the different package managers, what's really the difference? I mean, unless you're building the code yourself, you're trusting somebody. So why trust Deb over Flatpak?
You're asking me why I would trust Deb over Flatpak?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not saying I necessarily would. Okay. Now, so if I take it back and say, I would trust a Debian package coming from the Debian repos, right? I would have a little more trust in that. Same with Flatpak, with like, when I installed Fedora and it had some Red Hat, like, or Fedora suggested Flatpak repos, I would say
adding extra repos.
Right, okay. I would say I'm a little confident. Flathub.org, I don't know anything about. Like I said, this is the first time I really paid attention to it. How legitimate and how trustworthy it is, I don't know. It could be great. It could be fine. I don't know. You know, is it like adding a PPA? You know, at that point where, hey, anybody can run a PPA. Doesn't mean everybody should run a PPA kind of thing, you know, as how trustworthy is it. But what I was kind of getting at, Joe, is I'm like, I just feel like Synergy to me feels like a fairly small application. It does great stuff, right? But it almost feels like a waste to have to like run a whole, like everything self-contained in the Flatpak, run that just to run Synergy. I feel like that might introduce extra resources on top of it than what it would be running just natively inside its own, inside the rest of your operating system. That's what I was kind of getting at. You know, it's like, yeah, I could probably run Date, build a flat pack that runs Date, but that sounds like a terrible idea. Why would you want to do, yeah.
Well, I can kind of understand that. It'd be like building a Docker just to run, you know, Synergy.
Right.
Same type of thing. And that would be completely pointless. Why have that level of isolation and just for something that simple?
Right. Now, if it was like, yeah, if it was like GIMP or something a little larger that, so, and I've never tried to install Barrier from source, so I don't know how easy or difficult it is.
Yeah. Well, I did do a search right now, and it looks like neither Synergy nor Barrier currently work on Wayland.
Yeah.
So it's pointless for me to even bother trying, because that's
well, what you could always Fedora's can't using. You install Xorg on Fedora?
Yeah, I can. But you know what? It's been so long, I just gave up.
Well, I thought Wayland was about to do the same thing.
But give up?
Yeah.
I don't. What is the status of Wayland? I heard like wait, like Ubuntu was switching over to Fedora, switched over to it.
Yeah, but didn't Ubuntu switch back?
Yes, Ubuntu switched back on their did Ubuntu switch over on their long-term release?
I think so.
And then they switched back in a short, like a point release or development, like the non-long-term, non-LTS. I don't remember when it had to be 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So was it? Wait, let me think here. So long term release 1604 and 1804 were long term releases, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then next long term release is 2004.
Yes, that should be correct.
And if Ubuntu switched in a long-term release, I don't think it was 1604, because that seems way too long ago.
Hold on. The Ubuntu desktop has still been using the trusted Xorg session by default, while Ubuntu 1904 will soon be shipping, and Ubuntu 1910 development cycle then getting underway. Don't look for Wayland by default change to be around the corner. So 2004 is not supposed to have Wayland by default, and 1904 also didn't.
So was it 1804 that did?
As you can do now on 1810 and earlier releases, interested users can still switch to GNOME Wayland session on Ubuntu desktop, but I'm not seeing where it was default.
But it was at some point, I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, at some point it did. Yeah, they were talking about when Ubuntu team flipped the switch on Wayland as default in Ubuntu 1710, they said that they might switch back in 1804 owing to the fact that it is an LTS. In 1710, they'd switched to Wayland, and then looks like 1804, they switched back.
I think, yeah, I guess that's how it went, if I recall correctly. I went to Wayland. Synergy didn't work. 1804 switch. That would be 1810, I think, right? Or 1710, right? And when 1804 came out, I just never switched it back to XOR because it didn't do that automatically.
Right.
I remember that. Like, if you were on Wayland, it still left you on Wayland. So then I just never switched back. It wasn't until, like, I think it was this year or at the end of 2018 that I switched back to Xorg off of Wayland. And never
You don't do reinstalls very often?
No, that's why I'm on Fedora right now.
Yeah.
Like when I ran Slackware and when I run Arch and Debian, I typically don't do reinstalls. Like, I just continue to upgrade. Now, Arch is a rolling release upgrade, but I find that with Ubuntu, after I do that like 4 or 5 times, it just starts running like crap. And I don't know why.
Technical drift.
And like I was saying, I think it was last week or the week before in regards to that, or last show or the show before, like 3 or 4 weeks ago. I don't know if the problem is that in-place upgrades, or it has to do more with GNOME and the changes that happen with that, and just, you know, leaving my home directory in place. And because, again, when I'm running Ubuntu, I typically run either Unity or GNOME Shell, because they seem to work the best. I've done KDE and Fluxbox and all that, and there's just such, like, nice, well-designed, tight integration of everything inside of GNOME, and sometimes I think that falls apart when you're not running like a desktop environment. You're running like a window manager, Fluxbox, or window maker, and you know, XFCE has got some pretty good integration, but even that, it didn't seem to make much of a difference there. So GNOME would start running, stuff would get sloppier and slower, and just seemed a little less stable. And I don't, like I said, I don't experience that with Slackware, Arch, or Debian. So that's why I'm trying Fedora. I want to see if that results in a similar thing. Who knows?
What made you pick Fedora over CentOS?
Well, personally, having run CentOS for work and knowing like what CentOS is and what's available for CentOS, I don't really have the patience to run it as a desktop. I don't want to have to deal, like, that's, there's not a lot of options. I don't think there's a lot of decent desktop software for CentOS out of the box. I'd rather run Fedora.
Well, isn't there the compatibility there with Fedora and everything that would run on Fedora?
I do believe that there is some compatibility there. It's just I don't look at CentOS as a, that has always been to me more of a server, and I've tried running CentOS as a desktop a while ago, and it's probably not a, you know, at this point, you're right, there's probably a decent compatibility between Fedora and CentOS, and if you enabled the RPM Fusion, I suspect that there might be some support there. And I could be talking out my ass right now, but there's just not, in the CentOS repos, it's not really something that the intent is to run as, I think, a workstation for what I do on a regular basis.
Hey, Pat. Hey, talk about guns for a minute. I gotta feed my dogs.
Okay.
So I don't know. We'll probably get hate mail. People telling me CentOS runs great as a.
I never took you first for you know, Fedora, CentOS type of guy.
You know, I wanted to give it a try, is what I, because I heard Klaatu on GNU World Order talking about running CentOS, and I was like, it's been such a long time since I played around with Fedora or Red Hat from a personal, like, enjoyment home use standpoint, as opposed to running it at work, which is just pure servers and stuff like that. So, thought, why not give Fedora a spin? It's been a long time.
I mean, as a server, I'm sure it's great. You know, you're in the Red Hat world. It's good stuff, you know. But I don't know. I've tried it in the past, and I didn't care for it.
Wait, which one, CentOS or Fedora?
A Fedora and a desktop.
Oh, okay. Now, I see where you're coming from. Like, it's been a while since I tried it too, but as another one I seem to have problems with, and I like it, is the SUSE desktop Linux.
Yeah, they put a lot of work into it. It's very professional, and it's well done. It's a mature, you know, distro.
But again, I feel it's not like it's maybe in a corporate environment. It's really geared for that home use. But it's been so long since I ran OpenSUSE, I don't know if there's a how it stacks up, you know. And I always remember running Yast was slow as shit.
Yeah, it wasn't the best. I don't know. I find apt-get to be the best package manager after all these years, you know.
I tend to agree with you. I do.
It just, you know, it's you get issues once in a while where, you know, something gets broken, and then you have to remove packages and re-add them manually. But generally, that doesn't happen very often. Usually, that happens on when you have a release that's kind of old, and you're just getting package updates.
Right.
Yeah, well, I tend to prefer, you know, apt install, but app image does have its uses. I mean, the portability there, just to, you know, be able to put it on a USB stick and take it to any machine that I'm working on.
Wait. What are you talking about? You talking about app images now?
Yeah.
You're switching topics faster than Joel.
I can't help it. We were talking about, you know, packaging systems and the one, and you were saying that you preferred, you know, app install, and I was just, you know, thinking there are uses for the other ones.
Oh yeah, see, I don't know. I kind of look at Flatpak and Snaps and I don't know if I want to include App Image in with Flatpak and Snaps.
Why?
So this is maybe you can correct me if you feel differently. Please speak out. The repos, right? Apt, DNF, RPM, repos, you know, that's a packaging system. That makes, I get that. That's a packaging system. There's a lot of dependency checking and stuff like right. that. And so there's packaging, and they're built specifically for that distribution that you're running, right? And there's some portability across other distributions, but that's supposed to work over there. Flatpaks and Snaps, I think, have extrapolated some of that. You know, they've taken away the distribution that it's on and provided, like a container.
Universal libraries.
Right, yeah. And so that's in there. And so you still have, like, you can install them from, you can pull them down from the commands, Flatpak command, and there's, like, repos for them. And there's dependency in there, but you can't take a Flatpak and just run it, right? You actually have to have the Flatpak infrastructure, and you know, same thing with Snap. You have to have that framework on there. But with app images, you just pull the app image down and run it.
It's more like having just an executable that
right.
you can take anywhere. Yeah, okay, okay.
So I'm not I think flat packs are awesome because that's what I did. I ran the flat pack for the image writer, etcher, whatever it was to write to that. I pulled it down, the app image, and I ran it in Ubuntu, and then I just ran it yesterday on Fedora. And it ran perfectly both ways, so... You know, Flatpak to me is a little bit different in that it is like truly run it on anywhere, just execute it, and you don't have to have any other framework installed. I like that, but I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh no! This was your conversation. No, I'm agreeing with you, but my next question would be, where do you think Docker would fit in that paradigm? More as the same as AppImage or the other packaging systems.
I don't think I would put Docker in, and that would be to me something in and of itself because okay. Now, like, if you're gonna run Docker, and there's a whole lot of other things that you got to take into consideration when running it. I mean, it's not like you just pull down a Docker image and double click on it. Next thing you know, you're running GIMP, right?
Right.
So it's not like an app image, and Flatpak is kind of like, you just run Flatpak in the application name or whatever it is, and you can set it up to run a different way. But that seems fairly simple. Like with Docker, like case in point, right? And I was going to bring this up, but thank you that you brought this, you know, in a different part of a conversation. But thank you, you brought this up, Joe, and I can segue into this because it ties exactly into what you're saying. My biggest problem now with Fedora is, and it kind of bums me out, is that the Unify system, that is the software that ties together the Ubiquiti line of hardware, which is this Unify gateway that I have, the switch, which works wonderful, but it uses that application. They have a package for Debian systems, particularly Ubuntu, and it works pretty well to install, but there isn't one for Fedora. There's no Flatpak that I can find. There's not an app image, but somebody did build the Docker container, and so I was playing around with trying to get it to run, and it's not as simple as just pull the container down and run it. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you got to try and figure out what to do to get it to run. So
right, you got
to
get the settings right.
Yeah. So
before you even execute.
True. Exactly. So I look at that and say, yeah, you know, that is an avenue that I could take. And I'll probably eventually figure it out, so long as that container was built properly and there's no other problems with it, right? But I don't think it's, you know, as convenient as an app image, nor is it even as convenient as snaps or flat packages. So I consider that
its own thing.
Yeah, its own thing. And well,
because it's not really virtualization. It is containerization, but then, you know, it's containerization that you have slightly less control over than most containerization.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what category. It is in a category of its own.
So I'm like... So if I wanted to run GIMP inside a container, you know, I've never tried doing that.
Well, I've run Chrome from a Docker container before, and that requires you to use what, Xhost Plus?
Yeah, I was gonna say, how did you get? You probably had to open it up by, you know, going through the X server, right?
And yeah.
Then it displays on your machine.
Yeah.
But it's running in the container.
Correct.
So you'd have to do similar things for GIMP and everything.
Yeah, well, for any graphical application, right, you would have to.
But then if you're playing around like doing something in GIMP, then you have to worry about like mounting some volume into the container so that whatever you create or do, you have to have a way to save and retain that. Otherwise, it's only going, right, to save it to the file system in the container, and once you're done with the container, it's gone.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Well, you have to do the same thing with, you know, Chrome if you're planning on downloading anything from the internet.
Right. So you have to mount the volume. Like,
yeah,
something in your file. Yeah, and that's easy enough to do. But that, again, that's like, that comes down to how many people who just want to use it like desktop wise, unless you want to really get into the nitty gritty of this stuff, are going to actually be able to do that or have the patience to do that.
That's why I save all the commands that I use.
In a
GitHub container. Redo it later.
In a container?
No. Well, no, I put it in, well, right now, what is it? Standard notes. Every command that I use for Docker, I store in a file in standard notes so I can come back and use it again later.
What's standard notes?
Well, it's kind of what I was using originally, OneNote back in the day. It's just a note-taking application. But I switched away from OneNote and moved to, what was it, Evernote.
Dropbox.
And then Evernote started closing things, and then I switched to something else that was more
open. Who's
in
the bathroom?
And...
Oh, can you hear that? That's my...
Yeah,
hold on.
Don't pee during the show, Dan.
No, it's my washing machine. Sorry. I didn't think it was picking it up. Sorry.
And then I finally switched to standard notes because it's encrypted.
Is it a web app?
It's just a note-taking tool.
No, but I mean, is it an application that you installed, or is it a web app?
Oh, no, it's an installable application. Let me see. On this one, it's actually not... It's not a deb. So...
So you could use what the heck is it, NextCloud, because that'll do the sync like Dropbox and all that bit, and you could do notes on that, but more,
right,
Dropbox-ish.
And I tried that for a while with like Jedit and OwnCloud at the time, and it just doesn't organize your notes for you.
Oh, okay.
Well, this is my question.
Standard Notes is an app image.
Yeah, so that's pretty neat. Is it open source?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
But okay, here's my thing. I like that kind of application, right? I've always wanted to find like a note kind of application. And Rich, just kind of get into what you're just talking about right there too. Something that I would have and control, be like an app installed on my system that would sync everything together. Because if I'm working, if I'm on my work machine and I want to access, oh, I remember X, Y, and Z, and then I'm at work and I can access that there. Or if I'm at home working on my laptop and say, oh, I remember some, you know, and I can access it there. I mean, how do
And that's why I like standard notes, because, you know, I install the app image. I have it installed on 3 machines right now. And, you know, I open it up and it's automatically synced with all my other notes.
How?
Well, it's actually through their system as opposed to, you know, one I've built myself, but it's encrypted end to end. I mean, if you lose your password, it is non-recoverable. So if you lose your password, you have the logins that you have now, and that's it.
So all your stuff gets synced through
them.
Is it on their, like, stored on their server and everything?
I believe it actually is stored on their servers, because
okay,
there have been times where... I've only had one machine and it wouldn't be on later, and I'd switch to another machine, and the notes still synced. So it's got to be on their servers.
So it's just like that's where it's stored, and they pull these are the clients that pull it off.
Right, but it can also be stored locally.
I can see it probably is. So they have a free and an extended. Are you doing the free?
Yeah, I'm doing the free right now.
To get AES 256 encryption, no one but you can read your notes. Easy to use open source apps. Cross-platform. That's nice. Open source cross-platform. Automatic sync with no limit on data capacity. Unlimited.
Yeah, that's one of my big things, is it being available for Android. So if I want to, I can just record a note on my phone and have it available on my laptop later.
See, I almost like when I look at this and it says automatic sync with no limit on data capacity. That almost, like, on the free account, that almost sounds to me like they're doing some kind of, like, they're not storing it on their side, but they're syncing it between all of the applications associated with your account. You know what I mean? Like, if you wrote a note, it would go out to all the other ones, but they wouldn't store a copy on their side. I'm wondering if that's it. Because it's like they're giving you an automatic sync with no limit on data capacity. If they're not limiting you on your data, I get the feeling like they're not storing it. They're just, and I'm not complaining about that. Don't get me wrong. I think that's great. I'd be perfectly fine with that. You know, if I'm not backing up my data, I don't expect them to. Unless I'm paying for it.
So does that mean if I were to shut down all the machines that I have that currently have standard notes on it and then opened a web client on another machine, I wouldn't have access until I turned on one of the other ones?
I don't know. That's a good question. They have a web client that goes into your account? And you should, I don't know.
You need to create a third account or a second account and try it out.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe they're giving you unlimited storage on their stuff. I mean, notes probably aren't that big, so it's just I'm gonna check it out. I will check it out. Thank you, Joel. I'll check it out.
You guys age yourselves with Face App? Everybody's doing it. You should too.
What's Face App? Nah.
It's a stupid app where people take a picture of themselves on their phone, and the app shows you how you're going to look, say, 30 years in the future.
Oh.
And it's put up by some Russian company, so people are Russian talking about
farm.
Yeah, well, now they got your picture and your name, so.
And they know what you're going to look like in 10 years, in 20 years.
Yeah. 150 million people.
Building that database now.
150 million people.
Okay. The entire encryption and decryption process happens completely offline and in the safety of your own private device. Once it is encrypted, it is synced to your private notes account over a secure encrypted connection.
So they are storing it.
That's what it reads like. It's not specifically saying that, but that's how it reads.
Wow, I'm surprised. I'm it's just like for a free account and unlimited storage.
Right. What's to stop you from uploading the text version of the Library of Congress?
I don't know. Can Indeed. You fit that in a note?
Copy and paste. Come on. Of course you can. Big enough buffer.
Hmm. I'll have to check it out. I'm going to try it out. I got a bone to pick with you, Mr. Hughes.
What'd I do? What'd I break?
No, you didn't do anything yet. No, okay, so this is kind of like this now leads into the next part of the conversation. And I'm glad that you're here. I wish Joel was here Because this is what I don't get.
Nah, nobody wished that. Don't be so generous. Nobody's wishing that.
So I was about to send the Pine Book back to you, and then I was like, you know what? Let me get a card that is supposed to work. That I looked it up, and they said a lot of people were like, this card works. It works perfectly. This is made, you know, works perfectly for the Pine Book, and should be no problem, right? So I got one. It was they recommended on the forums and stuff, and I was reading the Samsung Plus EVO Plus, right? And I double checked and everything, matched it up, everything. And I ordered one, and it came the other day, 32 gigabyte card. And I used the etching application to put the OS on there, and it's the same thing.
What? Are you really doing the right thing? Because there is an EMMC on there also.
So what I'm doing, and correct me if I'm wrong, I plug this card in to my laptop, and I run the etching application,
right?
Whatever it is, and I chose Pinebook, and it lists a bunch of different operating systems. I've tried a few of them, mm-hmm. but this time I went back and I tried the Arch one again, which I had already downloaded.
Okay, do you know what? Unscrew the base of it, pull off the EMMC, and try it from the SD card, because maybe you're having a conflict on the boot.
Well, let me explain what's happening. And I don't know. Maybe that's that's weird, because why wouldn't that have affected Joel?
Maybe Joel stole the EM. No, just teasing.
maybe don't he did. But that's the thing. This all three different cards that I have tried produce the same thing. I plug the card in, I turn it on, and it's just a black screen. Never changes. Just a black screen. If I
maybe Joel broke it and sent it to you.
I don't know. If I turn it off,
something's not happening.
And take the card out and turn it back on, it goes into Android.
Oh, okay. All right. So it is booting off the EMMC.
Right. So I know that it boots off the EMMC. I know, well, it boots off of something and it runs Android, but when I plug the card in, the SD card in, it doesn't do anything. It just stays at a black screen. And I don't get any input or anything back.
Yeah, I forget what you have to do if there's an EMMC in there. If you, my best recollection is just you can put an SD card in and it boots. I'm trying to think if there's anything special. I know sometimes when you make an SD card image, that if there was prior formatting, prior formatting on it, like different partitions, I've actually had to go in like with gparted or so and pull other partitions off so it does mount and burn correctly. But I would just check that there's no other partitions.
I mean, I even wiped out the other ones completely and manually, like you said, doing like that. It's just weird.
No, oh, that's pretty weird. I agree. So I haven't even watched it yet. There's a video with the new Pinebook Pro out. So they're doing 4K playback with YouTube, WebGL, and Quake 3 demo.
Yeah, I watched that. They have a dual monitors too.
That's freaking hot. Why does everybody use Big Buck Bunny? Is it just with like some of the shading and the depth?
It's free.
On? Is that it?
It was developed by the Blender team, so it's like completely.
There's no open source or whatever. There's no rights to it.
Yeah, it's released under Creative Commons.
Oh. Okay.
I think it's either attribution or no, you know, you don't have to give attribution. I forget which one it is. But yeah, since they've released that, like everybody uses that. I've even seen it used in different things at work for testing.
Oh, yeah. So I'm just kind of jumping through the video as I'm watching right now. It looks real good. I mean, looks as much as a video of a video can be good. It really does look good.
Didn't we have the conversation? Were you here last week with the conversation about why the heck would you want 4K support?
I bailed early, but yeah, you know, 4K support is nice. It is like a standard, but heck, I think when you're talking about you're going up against a Mac with Retina displays and all of that kind of stuff, that it's a talking point. But realistically, if it was 1080p, I'd probably be darn happy with it.
Yeah, I don't. I'm still somewhat intrigued by it.
Even the Pinebook itself, I don't have an issue with the display. I don't know what the original Pinebook's display is, but it looks darn good to me.
So if you want to look at the MMC card, you got to take the whole bottom off, don't you?
Yeah. Get out the jeweler screwdrivers.
Do you know you're missing a screw on the bottom?
That's Joel's problem then. Well, I knew he had a screw loose. I didn't realize it was mine.
Well, I don't know. There's one screw that was not in here on the bottom. So I just wanted to call that to your attention. So when I send it back, you're not like, hey.
And tell me about all the dents and bangs and the cracks in the screen now also.
I should have taken pictures of it when it arrived. Wait, how do you get the bottom off once you get the screws out?
Oh, it's been a while for me, so I don't
know. Has it just come off? I mean,
I'm pretty sure it just pops off.
I don't want to nick it or anything.
That's okay. It was $100.
I care. I feel like there's
a lot of credit cards.
I feel like I'm missing something here. Because
yeah, make sure there's no like little hidden screws somewhere.
There aren't. I don't think there's screws under the feet, right? You know what I should do? I should look it up. Is there anything on the top?
Yeah, I'm looking up a video right now.
I could be watching the video. But yeah, I'm worried about trying to get the bottom off and like cracking the case, but I feel like it snaps off. I'm not 100%.
It looks like there's four screws across the front and back, and one on the side, one on each side.
Oh yeah, okay. You just need to apply a little pressure, and make sure nothing's blocking.
Then it cracks in half.
Yeah, then it cracks in half. That's what I'm worried about. Yeah. Oh no, it just snaps in there. I like this. I like the design of this. I mean, it's. All right, here we go.
For $100, I'm very happy to give them my money. That was a great product, and if it led to them... Yeah, so they're using some sort of suction cup to pull off the bottom, because I guess it does stick even with the screws.
What the hell is the EMC?
I know I had the bottom off. Yeah, they're using a guitar pick also.
Where the hell is the EMMC?
It's on the board. It's got to be in there because it's booting.
Is it on the other side of the board? Do I have to unscrew the board? No.
Hold on. I don't. No, no. I think if you look towards the hinge, I think it's the gray thing. Is there something gray there? Oh, no. That's silver.
Oh, wait. Is that it? It doesn't look like my EMMC for the Odroid.
Did you have to peel up some tape? I think you had to peel up some tape. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's it. So there's like a foil in some black. So you just peel up. Yeah, all right. So whatever's black in there, in that corner, you peel that up and the EMC is underneath.
All right.
So there, that black has like a copper foil under it, and you peel it up, and the EMMC goes underneath that. So right, I guess it's the wire for the display. If you look at the wire for the display,
yeah,
and like if you peel up that corner where the wire is on that bigger thing.
How do you peel that
rectangle?
Up?
Oh, quick change of subject. Did you guys pick anything up on Prime Day?
No, because I'm broke.
Yeah, I really didn't see anything that jumped out at me anyway.
I got some rechargeable batteries.
There were a couple like gun deals, but Dan, I'm going to send you the link in the video with the timestamp, and it's going to be on the IRC.
All right. Yeah, I worry about, like, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, I just don't want to break anything on it, even though, you know, oh, you're saying it's only $100, but.
Yeah, so if you look in the IRC, I timestamp the video. So if you just click on that link, it'll pop up and show you exactly.
Let me see.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, Man Fry?
Mr. Fry. Fry.
How's it going?
It's wonderful.
Well, hey now. That's not the right thing. That's not the thing I thought you were talking about.
Uh-oh.
Because when you say... So, yeah, good. Okay, I thought maybe, but when you say the black thing, I'm like, well, there's three black things on here. Three, like,
not
black...
the battery.
So there's and what you were saying, where the... If you look at it, you can see, I thought what you meant were the like, cable goes in to the hinge part.
Yeah. Yeah.
That black piece right there. Now, I see what you're saying now. I don't like the way that this...
Yeah, it's could have been better. But again, how often are you doing this? You're doing it like once in its lifetime, twice.
Well, that's why I'm asking whether... I don't think Joel had to do this.
I don't know.
Does it just pop off?
Yeah, it just pops off.
Let me watch the video. I don't want to... It'll probably show me in the video,
like,
right?
If you get a credit card or a guitar pick, you could just pry it out.
There's no way Joel would have done that.
Yeah, I see how it... There we go. Oh, there we go. Pulls right off.
Yay, it's broken.
Now let me stick it on the refrigerator here with a magnet. Just to make sure I know. I remember to put it back. All right,
the washing machine.
Yeah. It needs a cleaning, right?
Yeah. Clean that drywall, that EMMC.
What do I do with... Oh, okay. So the card... All right. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens now.
We getting any action? Sounds like somebody's teaching a parrot to talk.
Well, did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
The German?
Oh, yeah, whatever it was.
Oh, I wonder how that... Wonder where that was... That's on the video. I was like, oh, who's speaking German on our... So the same thing's happening. That's weird. It's just a blank screen.
Huh.
Let me... Maybe it just doesn't like any card I put in here.
And you're using Etcher, but the Etcher from Pine?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Wow. That's pretty foolproof.
So this looks like it's behaving without the EMMC in there. It's behaving the same way if I remove the card. Like, there's nothing that it can do, right? I'm assuming that without the card, there's nothing on. So it's just like it sits there. There's nothing on the screen that would lend me to believe that it's even doing anything.
Like not even a blinky cursor, nothing.
No,
not seeing any operating system whatsoever.
There's not even like a BIOS or anything image that pops up.
What happens when you take the micro SD card out as well?
Oh no, I have the micro SD card. I have the EMMC out, and I have the micro SD card out now. And like I said, it's doing the same thing that it does when the micro SD card's in there.
Do you have the base off still?
I do. Well, it's not screwed back in.
Because just check if there's a cable that connects that daughter board where the micro SD card goes in. and that the cable is seated.
The micro SD. Wait, you're right. The micro SD card is. It goes into a daughter board. I don't see any problem with that cable. It's like a little ribbon attachment. Uh-huh. Well, it's a ribbon cable, but it plugs in, and that seems to be pretty solidly in there.
Have you had it turned on, loaded up, booted up from the eMMC, and then seen it read from the micro SD card?
Oh, good question.
I believe I did.
Diagnostics process.
I'm pretty sure I did that, but I can try that out right now. I'll just put the micro SD card in, and I know it I thought I could have sworn it read the card, but that is. Let me double check that. Put this all back together. And here we go. I'll fire it up. And we'll see what happens. See, the moment I put that EMMC card back in there and fired it up, boom, the screen came up and said Pinebook.
Okay. Yeah, it should say that otherwise.
Once.
But when I have the SD card, it does not do that at all.
That's so weird.
So I will, so when it comes up, I will pop the card in there and see if it reads it.
I can read the card.
Pretty sure it does.
What are you working on? Too
bad Joel isn't on.
What's that?
What are you working
on? Too bad Joel isn't on, because I know he tried different OSs with it, and maybe he did something different.
I don't know. What am I working on, Manfry?
Manfry?
Yeah.
I'm playing around on the Pinebook that Rich
The Pinebook, not the Pinebook Pro.
Yeah, just the old Pinebook.
I gotcha.
And
if there's any way they could have done a backlit keyboard and a better touchpad, speakers. Yeah, speakers were a big handicap. And better speakers, that would have been great, great device.
All right, so I'm back in Android. I have slid the card in there.
Is there some file manager app?
Why does it have Android on it to begin with? Is that what it came with?
That's one of the images you can put on.
So how do I know if it detected my card?
Well, look in the apps if there's some sort of file.
Yeah, I'm.
But yeah, you do have. You should have files on there, right? Because you have an operating system installed on it.
No,
You sure with Etcher, you're targeting the right device?
No, I am. Yeah, no. No, because I can look at it. Oh wait, here we go. Wait. This is not right. Because it tells me SD card, but when I fire up the device, the file manager, and it shows like. It's on the SD card, but it's not. It's on the operating system itself. So is it not recognizing SD cards?
Well, Android, because you're loaded up into Android right now, right?
Yeah.
Android might not see it depending on the file system.
What are you using to browse files with?
What is this? Hold on, I'm trying to...
Is it mountable?
Ah, come on. It's ES...
ES File Explorer.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that allow you to go to root or look at MNT?
Well, I am... It says I'm on... Okay, I'm on root of the device. There's nothing in...
Is there Termex on there?
Oh, here we go. SD card. Wait, what? So it says the SD card.
Wait a minute. Where is it getting this stuff?
Well, ES File Explorer itself, at the when you first open it up, should list your internal storage and your SD card, and it should tell you how full it is. And if it's showing it as partially full, then you know that it's reading. Or if you are looking at the different storages that are available and then you eject the micro SD card, it should change.
All right, I don't think it's not reading the card, which kind of makes sense. I mean,
you could also plug in like a thumb drive and see what happens.
Let me try different. Let me.
Maybe Joel spilled a Coke on it.
Yeah, maybe that's the problem here. Oh. Whoa! Well, the SD card reader, I mean, it works because it.
When you ejected the card, something happened?
No, I just saw. Okay, it said when I plugged it in, it said that it recognized a card. So I ejected that one. Let me go back in with this other card. No, I've recognized this card too. Maybe it didn't have it in all the way or something. I don't know.
Dude, how many kids you have? You gotta have it in all the way.
Yeah. All right, so it recognizes that a card gets put in. I don't want to set it up and use it as storage, though, in this.
I think Rich was saying it's your pullout game that has the problems.
It might. It might be. All right, so how do you restart this thing? Is that? Oh, here we go. Reboot. All right, we'll see if it does anything now that I'm doing a reboot. I mean, I know it recognizes a card. If it doesn't, well, that's the way it's meant to be.
You could try LibreELEC. I know they have an image just for that chip.
I tried three different images and none of them work. Like right now, I rebooted. So it knows that there's something in there, but whatever it is, it can't boot off of it.
Have you tried Linux on Android?
Installing? No, I have not. I mean, Android was slow enough as it is. Trying to run Linux on top of it, I don't think it's going to, you know, make that. It's not going to run.
Yeah, it's not going to do very well.
All right. So that's weird. So, yeah, I don't know.
I'll try another imager next, besides Etcher.
Do any of the other ones work with the Pinebook? I mean, this is the one from Pinebook itself.
I think Rich was also saying try a USB stick and see if it'll...
Will it boot off a USB stick?
Yeah, see if it'll boot off a USB stick.
Yeah, I'd give it a try.
I'll do that right now. Yeah, that's one thing I didn't try.
If it boots off of a USB stick, then see if you have a... Well, you should have a SD card adapter to USB.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
SD card adapter to USB?
An SD card reader, essentially.
Yes. Well, I put that in here on the USB, and it just boots right into Android anyway.
Oh, okay. Okay. So maybe it doesn't allow it.
That is weird. There's no, like, boot option menu or anything in this thing, is there?
Dan, I have no idea. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, I thank you, Rich. I will check and see if I have a screw to replace the missing one in my thing of screws. Because nobody likes to have a missing screw.
and then we'll blame Joel.
Pinebook boot menu. Let's see what it says. Boot from SD card, boot options.
How do you get into that?
I'm reading right now. Can someone please tell me how to boot from SD card on the Pinebook? Is there documentation on boot mode options somewhere? I guess there's U-boot at work, but I don't know how to access the bootloader, etc. Okay, so you just have to insert an SD card with a proper Pinebook image into the SD card slot and power up the device.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Alright, let me see something here. I mean, this could be, I could be screwing this up myself. I don't know.
Okay. Generally, A64 boots from its internal ROM first, then checks if there is a boot zero binary at a certain location of the flash card or SD card or eMMC, and if it's valid, then it will initialize DRAM and hand over to U-boot. Are you sure that your boot bit is set?
What do you mean boot bit?
Well, when you create the image, it has to be a bootable image, right? And that's just a bit that you can be set. So if you open it up on your regular Linux machine and open it up in Gparted, you could see whether it was bootable or not. And you could set it to bootable from there, too.
Hold on. I'm screwing something in here. Let me just double check.
And you can get it to boot from USB if you take out the eMMC. Because it has its own boot order, and that's SD card, eMMC, SPI NOR flash, and then USB OTG.
So it has to have a boot flag on it, right?
Yeah, it should have a boot flag on it.
All right, because I'm looking at this right now, and it says this disk image. It says that it has a file system, a FAT16 file system that is 105 megabytes. That's partition one. Partition two is a Linux swap partition. That is 2 gigs. And the third partition is an ext4 partition that's flagged boot. And it's about four gigs is what it is.
Okay, as long as one of them's flagged boot, it should work. Now, I posted a link in the Mumble of somebody that was having a similar issue, and he switched to the Q4OS image, and that worked for him.
Q4? Let me see. Just Q? Okay, Q4.
Q4. If you scroll down to the very bottom on that link that I sent, it says sourceforge.net/project/Q4OS.
Yeah, I see the Q4OS is an option in here. Now, Rich, is Rich still there?
Yep, I'm here.
So, just so I'm clear, and you've run the Pine installer before, right, to create an SD card? So, I am clear. When I run the Pine installer, and there's an option there that says choose your OS.
And you select Pinebook as the hardware, right?
Yeah, there's two. There's a Rock Pro Pinebook and the 1080p Pinebook. It's talking about just the Pinebook, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the Pinebook.
Because that's the one I've been using. I will try the QOS. What is... Seven gigs? Ugh. It's going to take forever to pull down, isn't it? We shall see. All right. I'll fire this up, see what happens in a few minutes. Maybe.
What are we going to talk about till then?
What else did I have? Oh, you know what? In regards to our conversation last week, or my talk about Fedora, it's coming back to Fedora, Joe. It sounded like, based upon, like, now I think back of the of how I was talking about Fedora, I'm like, it feels like I gave it a bad review, and it was not the OS that was causing me issues itself. It was just, I was having some nitpicky issues with the installer, but I mean, it's been running like a top for me, and I've been very satisfied with it.
Cool.
So, I think this is, looking at this Pinebook forum, I think I saw this. I was looking this over where it's, people were saying, I think somebody said in here, it might just be a black screen. I don't know.
Did you try to let it load up for a while then? Just let it sit there with the black screen?
I did last night and it didn't do anything. I
went, or try to bring it up with the black screen and then hit Control-Alt-F4.
Control-Alt-F4?
Yeah, that should drop it to terminal if it's trying to load a desktop and can't. That should get you to terminal.
All right, so let me put this card in. So you're saying, oh, wait, got the black screen, Control-Alt-F. Well, I forgot I was still in. All right, so let me reboot this and see if that makes a difference. Let me reboot it and see what happens. So Control-Alt-F4.
Yeah.
Kooky. Alright. Oh, it's like it just ignored that card. Damn it.
Oh, it booted from EMMC that time?
Yeah, it might be... I might have the wrong card in there, and I think this is the one I need to have in there. Because one of them, I didn't flash, or I wiped out. Yeah, let me try this one. Dun, dun, dun. It's going to be one of these. Have you been, Man Fry?
Doing well. I was on vacation for a few weeks, which was great. Took the kids to
a few weeks, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, man, I've been going nonstop since it's got to be like beginning of December or November or something like that. So, I was off for 2 weeks. We were down in Disney. It was freaking hot. Rich, I don't know how you put up with it down there. I think it recorded 101 on the last day that we were there, but it felt like it was 113. So that was pleasant.
Dude, you go from air conditioned blank to air conditioned blank, whether it's the house to the car to the office or wherever.
Oh man, there's times in between though. Holy cow.
So did you go see Star Wars?
It's not open. But when you are at the top of the Slinky Dog roller coaster over in Toy Story Land, you can see the whole thing. It's freaking awesome.
Oh, cool. Oh, cool.
But no, we had a blast. We got to see my kids got to meet my grandparents. So, cause they lived down there their entire life. So they've never met them.
Excellent. Excellent.
So that was fun. It was great. I talked about like Marriott points and all that kind of stuff before on this, and how I was able to pay for basically all of this on my points, right? One thing I found out, this is another tip for all the travelers out there. If you are Marriott points are like gold, by the way. Collect as many as you can. You can walk up to any attendant at a Marriott hotel, which is the Dolphin, which is where we stayed at, is a Marriott hotel, and basically say, I want to use an instant redemption on my points to pay for all my incidentals.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
So at the hotel, like, you know, we would have breakfast or get coffee or get a drink or, you know, lunch or something like on days that we were there. Like, we weren't there. We were at the parks most days, but there were a couple days where we were there during the day. I got a massage at one point because walking around all over the place, my legs were just like stiff as hell. I basically walked up at the end of the day that we checked out and said, I want to use my points to pay for all of this. Now, I granted, at this point, I still had racked up like another 550 or 600,000 points, right?
Oh, crap.
Oh, crap. I'm on like day 93 here in a hotel for this year already, right?
Oh my gosh.
So I said, I want to pay for all my incidentals. And they're like, the manager came and figured it all out. And he's like, all right, cool. He goes, what I paid, we were there for 8 days, right? What I paid at the hotel was $6.87 for the entire
thing. Oh, that is awesome.
Yes. So I highly recommend get a freaking Marriott rewards card, like credit card, if you don't travel all that much. Bank these points, because I tell you what, man, they pay off like tremendously.
All right. So it's funny, I just told this story recently. I was doing consulting with VMware, and I would travel weekly. You know, I'd be flying someplace Monday morning, flying back Thursday night, staying at a hotel, renting a car, blah. And I would be accruing points. Now, here's the bad part about it. They actually wanted me to stay at a nicer place that was further away from the job. I stayed at a cheaper place that was a block away from the job. And I had to live lean because they weren't paying me for 90 days. And I didn't have enough float to stay at the better hotel that gave me the points. Otherwise, I'd be living like you. I'd be, you know, fat and happy with all sorts of points. But I didn't have the float to do it.
90 days is a long stretch, but I'm not paying you just yet.
Well, it's a long stretch, and I forgot how many K a week. Fryman, what are your expenses a week? It's like a couple of grand worth a hotel airfare rental car, right?
Well, I go into a city most of the time, so I don't need a rental car where I'm at. So, but it's a lift here and there, or it's a train pass or something like that, you know. But on average, they're probably about like 21, 22, you know, a week.
Right. So, you know, I was near $3,000 a week for, let's, 12 weeks. So we're talking like $36,000 on credit, waiting for them to pay off. So I had to stay at the cheapest place I could with no points. But that's so cool. I mean, if you can do that, that's fantastic.
I know. I mean, I am blown away by this. Like And I was talking to the manager, and he's like, yeah, he goes, you know, every person I talk to, they're like, always like, thank you for your loyalty, this and that or whatever. But he's like, you know what? He goes, you go away so much. I can see you go away so much here. I can look at your history and see all the points that you've accumulated. And he goes, we want you to play hard when you can. Right. So, I mean, and if it's with us, it's with us, you know, it's another property, whatever that may be. But we really value you coming and staying with us over and over again. And we really want to make it worth your while to come stay with us when you don't have to. Right. You know, so if you're on vacation or whatever. Right. So, yeah, I'm just blown away by what you can gain from just the points alone.
Well, that's the whole thing with all of the loyalty programs, whether it's, you know, hotels, rental cars, or airlines, is, you're going to pick the same one that you accrue the best points with, because you're going to be able to use that for yourself in the future.
And my company's really good about, like, they let us keep them. Like, I was working with a group from down there that would come up to Boston. They were not allowed to, keep those points. Like, they had to do it. Yeah.
You know, here's the whole thing, and I don't mean to be a complete jerk about it, But if I'm doing IT consulting and I'm getting paid net 90, and I'm away from, you know, I'm working 8 hours a day, or depending on how the thing works, it may be 10 hours a day. You know, I might be there for 4 10-hour days or something. Yeah, you need to let me keep the points, because you own me for those 4 or 5 days I'm away from my family.
Definitely.
So you're back to work now?
Me? Yeah, I was back here last week. I stayed home the week of the 4th since I wasn't going to travel on a short week. But yeah, back here this week and last.
And back there is Boston, right?
Yeah, I'm in Boston.
And when's your next vacation then?
I don't know. I keep telling Steph, I said, you know, pick where you want to go next, right? I mean,
Hawaii.
Start banking. Well, see, that's the thing. We were supposed to go there for our 10th anniversary. We always talked about going there for our 10th anniversary, right? And then the kids came along, and she's like, I don't want to be away from the kids for that long. I said, you're thinking about this wrong, right? Now when they're little, they want to go to their grandparents. When we do this later, they're going to want to stay home and throw parties and shit like that, right? So
yeah.
We had a blast, you know, what we did and stuff like that. You know, we were in Key West. It was great. But, you know, we always talked about the Hawaii, right? It's like, we should have done that. Yeah.
No, actually, I meant when you just used, you had a couple of weeks of vacation, you said, that you used. Now, do you have any more this year is kind of what I was saying. Did you use it all?
I don't really have a set number of days.
Okay.
So they are very flexible about this. If you need to take some time, they're like, go for it. Take time, you know.
That's cool.
I think that's happening with more and more companies, more internet-based companies and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So how long are you going to be at that place yet in Boston?
So I'm slated to be here through the end of the year, just because of how this project, the size of this project and whatnot.
Oy, oy, oy. You enjoying yourself?
I actually have a blast doing this. I've never had more fun being anywhere, to be honest, when it comes to work.
That is great. Is she doing a lot with containers over there now?
We are going to be doing a lot more with containers.
Wait, who do you work for?
Pivotal.
Do they do RabbitMQ?
We have a very large in it, I want to say.
Because
we might actually be the custodians of it, to be honest.
I think you are, because I was just like looking through the log files today on RabbitMQ, because we had a problem. Not with RabbitMQ, but Google was like, oh, this is bad hardware. We're just going to shut this down over here and move it over there. And they went, oh my God, one of the nodes is gone. And nobody knew what happened. Looking through the log files, and I saw when it was coming up, you know, when it comes up, it says it had Pivotal in there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the name of the company. And I was like, wait a minute, that's not Manfrat work for now.
Yeah, I use Rabbit, like, you know, on a, you know, at least with this project on a daily basis.
RabbitMQ. I use Rabbit on a fairly regular basis, and it's always, they always come to me when there's a problem. Yum.
Are you an administrator, a Rabbit administrator, with what you do? I know you do more, you know, heck of a lot more than that.
But yeah, I wouldn't call myself a RabbitMQ administrator, but that's what I have to do, because nobody else has the same level of working with it. Yeah, gotcha. I wouldn't I don't know if I would go out and say, I'm an administrator. I know enough to get around and figure problems out and solve problems on it. I don't know if I would say I'm an administrator because I would have more respect. I would have more respect for a RabbitMQ administrator than to call myself one.
Gotcha.
Is that kind of like you wouldn't belong to a club that would have you as a member?
No, I would be calling to a club that would have me as a member, but I don't know if I would if I wouldn't call myself the president of the club when I first signed up, though, is what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
I don't know, man. I tried that Control Alt F4, and it didn't give me any terminal or anything.
Oh, I'm kind of bummed. I really want you to have a good experience with that.
I'm a little bummed too, but I'll try again. Go ahead.
Hold up. Okay, so it is attempting to boot from the SD card, so we know that the boot flag is set and it's trying to read from it, but it's not booting anything up at all. And we know that because Control Alt F4, if there was anything there, it should quit out everything and go to terminal.
Mm-hmm.
So, an incorrect image. That's all it can be. Try that Q4OS one when it finishes downloading all 8 gig of it.
For some reason it failed. So you think it might be the I've read in further in there, it said there's the Pinebook and then there's the 1080p Pinebook, and one person said they had problems with what they were doing, then they switched to 1080p one and it worked fine.
Well, if you've already got the image and you're waiting for that other one to download anyway, why not give it a try?
So is it the same image just formatted differently?
I have no idea. I don't have...
I don't know, and I'm going to see if I can find my original order for the Pinebook and see if which one I got.
All right, let me try... Let me go to the 1080p one.
Is it a different image, or was it just the etcher that it had to be installed differently or something? That's what I thought you were talking about earlier.
Well, okay. I'm going to assume that it's just a way it has to be installed differently because I went to the 1080p Pinebook and I chose the Arch image, which I had pulled down previously. And it's just now checking it and writing it. It's not downloading, so it's flashing it. So I guess it is the same image, but... Probably written differently. Yeah.
Well, that'll be a quick test then.
My order just says thank you, 14-inch Pinebook laptop. That's all.
We'll see how long this takes to freaking flash. It says it's going to take 1 hour and 7 minutes.
What?
That seems kind of ridiculous.
Yep.
Well, maybe it's just going to lightning through this at some point. I didn't watch it the last time it flashed it.
Are you using USB 2.0? Even that shouldn't be that slow.
Yeah, I think it's 2.0.
You got like some ancient machine and you're using USB 1.1 and you just don't want anybody to know?
I did.
You got a PS2 to USB adapter, and that's what you're using?
Yeah, that's not... No, it's a parallel port.
Oh, God.
Parallel port adapter. Do they even have parallel ports anymore on systems? I guess on desktops, not on laptop. Oh. No, it's a 2.0 USB. Weird.
Even that shouldn't be taking that long.
No, but it says it's at the 0% still with regards to flashing, so I'm not exactly sure what it's doing in the background.
And you got a one of the better micro SD cards, right?
Yes.
Not a SanDisk?
No, I told you. I went out there and said, what SD card works best with the Pinebook? And a lot of people came back and said, the Samsung card that I got. And I said at the beginning.
The Samsung is nice. It's got that balance between cost and performance. It's not overly expensive, but it's usually got fairly good read-write speeds and doesn't die on its second day of use.
Why is this taking so damn long? Anyway, I'll let it run and we'll find out what happens to... Oh, there we go. Now it's flashing. Now it's going through really fast. Manfry, you got anything?
I am wondering if anyone's messed with the Raspbian Baxter. Buster. Because I upgraded. Well, I should say this. I did an update on a card for my one for a Pi 3. And then it would just turn on and hang. I don't understand why. And so I'm like, all right, you know what? I know Buster just came out for Raspbian. I know it's not the final release yet, so I downloaded it. And as I heard you mention an Etcher before there too. I always seem to have some issues with it, but I imaged it. And then I stuck that in a Pi 3 and it did the same thing. It was hanging. So I was like, what the hell's going on here? So I was able to go to a Micro Center and pick up a Pi 4. I figured maybe firmware needs to be up, you know, the firmware's updated thing and it's causing an issue or whatever. And it hangs on that thing too.
Which 4?
I have a 4 gigabyte one on order that I've been waiting weeks for, but at Micro Center they only had the 1 gigabyte ones.
Yeah, from what I understand, it should load, but Buster is a bit glitchy.
Well, I mean, it boots up and then it's like you can't move the mouse around, you can't do anything. So
I haven't heard of problems like that, but. I know a lot of people have mentioned that Buster really isn't ready for prime time yet.
But you can't run a 4 with a Raspbian, stretch, right?
Right. It has to be Buster for a 4.
So I don't know what to... I'm going to wait. When I get back home, I'm going to be able to hook it up to a monitor and stuff and see if I can see what's going on. Maybe I'll reflash it again, but it's been a pain.
Yeah, I ordered, I got, Friday I got notice that my CannaKit order of a Pi 4 shipped, and, so, I don't know if it's at the house, because I'm in Orlando right now, but, I'll be heading home tomorrow. My daughter said there were 2 packages for me, hope one of them was it. Can I ask you guys a question? Do you guys know what LVM is, Logical Volume Manager?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, so tell me if this is the dumbest thing in the world or not. If I set up Logical Volume Manager on, say, a Rock Pro 64, because it has an PCI port, PCI slot, and I can drop like a 7-port USB card in, and I can have, you know, n number of drives, you know, up to 7 drives plugged into it using LVM, and then using that as storage for something. I'm just testing it right now. I have my Odroid N2 connected to it. I have the Odroid N2 connected to it, and I was running Plex on the N2 and using the LVM as NFS storage. Is this like the worst idea? Like, what happens if one of the drives fail?
Go ahead.
Yeah, does the whole NFS go down if the drive fails? Do I have to do some sort of striping, or I know it's not striping, it's something else.
I don't think the whole thing fails. I think whatever data was on that would no longer be available, and it could, you know, that in and of itself could cause problems. I haven't ever tested that though.
I mean, I could test. I could just unplug a drive and see what happens.
You don't have it in production use, right? I mean,
no. It's on my desktop. I'm just at the Hughes Compound Southern Command. It's just sitting there. And I have a whole, you know, menagerie of different types of drives, you know, laptop drives, the whole shoot and match plugged into it, drives in a toaster, and, you know, just to make it all interesting. And it works. I'm just shocked as all get out. And the easiest way to do it is with Open Media Vault. Open Media Vault, there's an LVM plugin, and, you know, it's just setting up the NFS and all of that with Open Media Vault. So stink easy.
Is it JBOD?
Well, all right, so LVM is kind of JBOD, but basically it presents it as one volume.
Okay, so they're still separate, but it's listed as one volume.
Right. So the other thing I'm going to be doing is I ordered a knockoff kilowatt, because my next question is, how much does it cost me to power all this crap? Because you can get I think they were $139 when I was at Costco this week, like an 8 terabyte USB 3 drive for $139. So if you're generating all sorts of noise, heat, etc., from, because I have 1, 2, 3 terabyte drives kicking around, and I'm wondering, does it make any sense to use them? They're all perfectly good.
You said $140 for an 8 terabyte.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that was USB-C, USB 3.0.
USB 3.
Yep. Oh, okay, yep. Perfect.
Yeah, so I mean, the power draw on one drive like that is probably going to be hands down a lot less than all of the other drives running. Plus the complexity of the whole thing.
So, Rich, from what I read, that unless you have configured RAID on the LVM, some form of RAID, you drop a disk in the volume, it will probably go into what is it called, like partial mode, and you should still be able to access the files on there unless you try to access a file that was in the location that's gone. On the disk that's gone, then it will throw I/O errors. And then because that happens, depending on what applications you're running, you know, the results will vary, whether, you know, what kind of problems it'll cause with them. But then when you bring the disk back on, you should be able to recover it. But some things you don't want to do are, you know, when the disk goes away and you want to try and fix it, don't try and resize the disk again or anything like that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to let you do that. And what's another thing to be aware of from what I was reading? Don't run FSCK on it.
Yeah.
Because you will lose whatever it is that was gone. And it probably won't be recoverable within the volume as where it was. So that's what I have read. Did you say you didn't do any RAID on it, did you?
No, I didn't do any RAID. Set them all up as, you know, volumes and LVM, whatever. You know, it's, you set up the PVs and then the LVs and then the volume group, or I did it backwards, the volume group and then the logical volumes.
Yeah, so if you drop a disk and you can bring it back, then you can recover it. Otherwise, you run into problems. You can run into problems with data loss and everything.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it'd just be interesting. Maybe I'll go home and pull a drive out, see what the heck happens, because I'm just, I just have MP4 files, you know, MKVs, stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, how much of that do you have already set up? Like, how much storage are you already using?
I've got like 12 terabytes set up that way. And again, this is
no, but how much of that is
throwaway system?
Yeah, how much of it's a throwaway? 12 terabytes a throwaway?
Well, it's just disks I had laying around.
No, but what I mean, like, how much of that 12 terabytes is being consumed right now?
Oh, I just put like 4 videos on it.
So you're just testing this out right now, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I just plugged it together.
Okay,
because
I was going to say, I mean, if you don't really care about losing that, you could just recreate it all and set
it's
mirroring.
It's completely nuke and paveable. Yeah, it's
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you could do that. That's what I was saying. That's what I was getting at. I mean, it's apparently you just use the type when you're creating the volume, and you can choose, like, have it mirrored or a RAID number level.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It makes it easy. It's too easy.
Yeah, so, I mean, what are you guys' thoughts about that? If, let's just say I have 5 separate drives set up in an LVM, I'm guessing I would be dumb not to do some sort of RAID.
It depends on what data, and if you don't really give a damn about the data that's on there, whatever. But
easily replaceable, then yeah, it doesn't really matter.
I mean, if you have all the space and stuff and the storage to do that, why not set up RAID? That way you don't... At least if something bad happens, you could easily recover.
Basically, if I'm saving it, I'm saving it for a reason. That's not, you know... Like, right now, it's severe test, nuke, and pave. But I was just wondering if it's something I should consider for any kind of storage.
I wouldn't. I mean, because of the possibility that one drive goes down and all of the data is non-recoverable.
Yeah. I gotta look into the RAID, see how that works and what RAID level.
Use all the RAID levels. Give
all
it all of them.
RAID 5.1.
50 million.
Well, I kind of, again, I'm not Mr. Greeny environmentalist, but I've got all of these perfectly good working drives. It's just that they're not 8 terabyte drives. And I don't want to send them to the landfill, but they might not be worth using either.
What size are they?
Yeah, there's like 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte.
Damn!
You know, stuff like that.
I don't even think I have a terabyte of storage here.
Yeah, you're probably not going to be able to RAID them together then. If they're various sizes. Not without losing a lot of storage space.
Yeah, but I think it all works different in the LVM. Oh, wait. Yeah, you know what? Hold on, let me take that back. Yeah, because that wouldn't work. You can't do a RAID if it's not partitioned on a particular volume, because the whole point of having RAID is that you can rebuild volumes. Yeah.
Now, I know sometimes with ZFS pools, you can have them different sizes, but it's really not optimal. You end up losing a lot of space. At least that's what I've heard.
Yeah, it's... Like I said, it's just something kind of dumb I thought up. I got all of the parts. I didn't have to buy anything new to do it. So,
well, why does it need to look like one volume?
May not need to look like one volume. But I guess for the smaller ones, it's helpful because, you know, ganging a couple of 1 or 2 terabyte drives together.
Yeah. I wonder
like
if you could, like...
just
mirror like mm-hmm. 2 sets, you know, make 2 LVM or make 2 volumes, one with a 1 terabyte, one with a 2 terabyte, and then another one with 3 terabyte if you have it, and then, you know, RAID them together, mirror.
Gotcha. do something.
We gotta start wrapping this up. It's getting late.
Is it?
Whoa.
Yeah, but good stuff. Do you have another question, Rich?
Nope, no, I'm good.
Dun dun dun. I tried the Pine 1080p image, and it did the same thing.
Oh.
So I'm gonna have to pull down, try to do the QoS. I'll try that. I'll write that on here and see if that works. I'm not giving up yet, Rich. I'm still plugging away at it.
Call Joel. Find out what he did or how he broke it.
He stuck his tongue in there.
It's the lick the pine book challenge.
He never actually turned it on. He was just pretending.
Maybe, no, I know he turned it on because he's like, oh, I see all your account information here. Let me read your emails.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's just getting all of a sudden like Jolie's showing up in your your Google Photos account.
Yeah, somehow I got signed up to all these porn accounts that keeps coming to my Gmail. Don't know why.
Pictures of Joel going manual on a tranny just randomly start showing up on your phone.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, where's the mental bleach?
Oh man. Alright. We'll play out our promos. Everybody loves Linux Lugcast, especially Joe. That's where you'll find him. Over there on Friday nights.
First and third Friday. And that's this upcoming Friday.
Yep, of each month. See, I know. I know. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Later, guys.
Have a good one, Mr. Man Fry. You going home tomorrow?
Yeah. I'm actually on a little bit earlier flight tomorrow, which is kind of nice.
All right, excellent. You have a safe trip.
Thank you.
And Rich, you're heading home tomorrow too?
Indeed, I am.
And I hope that I hope you get all the packages that you want.
Yay, stuff.
May you enjoy your package. And Joe, I guess you're not going anywhere except the heat, right?
Yeah, I try to avoid that.
Well, good luck. Stay chilly. Stay frosty, my friend.
I will stay air conditioned.
There you go. All right, here you go. Your promos. And I know. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you in a week. Enjoy. Etcher.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. K. Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
The Jack Attack Podcast. Where chic,
oh dear,
meets geek.
Ones and zeros, ones and zeros, ones and zeros.
Powered by Linux.
Linux.
You by fun. Recorded in Windsor, Nova Scotia. With your hosts, John Watson and Kelly Penguin Girl.
A girl?
A girl.
A girl?
It's the Jack Attack. That's the JAKattack.com. Time well wasted.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Dun dun dun. Whew. Oh, it's just me left. Alright, well. Good night. All right, that was... So here was the problem with this, right? First time I connected, I'm like fiddling around with the Pulse audio controls, and I'm like, why can't I see the devices I think I should be seeing? It makes no sense. And I was fiddling around with those, and so I closed Mumble. I started back up. No change. Closed Mumble. I unplugged the mic and plugged it back in. No change. Well, what it comes down to is I'm not sitting here unplugging the mic. I'm unplugging the mouse. I didn't even have the mic plugged in. Like, what the hell? And on top of it, I also had the microphone has an on-off, a mute button, an on-off. And for the past year and a half, it didn't work. So I must have bumped it to the off position. And now, working under Fedora, it works just fine. So I don't know what's up with that. I thought it was a hardware issue, but it turns out it must be a software issue. But again, what I find weird is that it would, like, somehow the OS is overriding what the hardware switch does. I don't understand how that happens. Explain it, Joe.
Magic voodoo.
Well, that's how we go. Where's Mr. Hughes today?
He's running light.
Pizza.
Yeah. How you doing, Pat?
I'm good. I can't complain.
And Joe, you're doing good?
Well, I'm not dead.
Well, that's a positive.
I didn't know that was a possibility right now.
Death is always a possibility.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess. You could look at it that way.
Well, I have no complaints.
Ay, ay, ay. What we got going on today? Wait, is Joel going to be here today?
No idea.
I don't remember him saying he wasn't going to be here.
I know he was talking about going somewhere, like a trip. I don't know when that was. I can't remember when it was, I should say.
I thought he was doing like some kind of retreat or something about his church.
Yeah, or something like that, but maybe that was just over the weekend.
Unless he had a business trip.
Wait, did he say it? No, that was Thursday last week. I think he said something about not having to get up because he was doing a server upgrade. Oh. Here we go. All right. Uh, Is it nice and hot up there, Pat?
It was until about 2 hours ago. Then it started raining, and then it cooled off quite a bit.
Nice. Was it a nice rain, or was it a downpour?
It was a downpour.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, it's been hot the last week or so. You know what? It's the middle of fucking July.
Yeah. you're right.
I remember one summer when I was in college and I interned in New York at some place, and it was like over 90, like every day for a fucking month straight. And that was like 30 years ago. So whatever.
All right. What do we got going on here? I think this, yeah, okay. I do this every week. Right?
You would think.
Man, someone's just trying to decide what to play.
Huh, yeah. Where is everybody?
So, I was waiting to see whether... anybody else is showing up before I start. and here we go. All right, everything's all set up. Is anybody in the chat? Oh, let me double check the stream. Oh no, I gotta restart the stream. I think it's 21, isn't it? All right.
We're gonna start, or we're gonna wait a few more minutes?
I was getting the stream back up. Hold on.
We're gonna start in a couple of minutes. I need to run to the bathroom.
Yeah, go ahead. Go to the bathroom. I'm just making sure the stream is up. There we go. Stream is up. Stream is up. Where's the stream going? Stream is up. I can't hear it though. Ooh, I really need to figure this out. I gotta get this pulse audio down. Yeah. So the stream is about 3 or 4 seconds behind. Yep. No, maybe 10 seconds behind.
Isn't that normally the case?
Yeah. Sometimes it's a little faster, sometimes. Yeah. But that's good. All right. Pack is back. We'll start the show. Hey, Jay Gatsby. Now that I'm running Fedora, I should go back to Synergy. It should work just fine.
It should. Which system did it not work on?
So when Ubuntu...
Oh, Wayland.
Switched over to Wayland is when it stopped working. And then Ubuntu switched back. It's just I didn't...
pre-install, yeah.
No, I you know what? I think I switched it manually back to Xorg.
Isn't there a fork of it now?
Of what? Wayland?
No. Synergy.
That's a good question. I don't know. I know when I went looking, there was talk about them getting it done, and they were working on it, but that was like a year and a half, 2 years ago. So I don't. Okay. I mean, I assume that they would have finished it by now. It's just
I gave up.
Okay.
I'm seeing two forks. Okay, the first one is called Debauche, Debauchee. I think, oh no, that's the person's repo. So it's called Barrier.
Barrier?
Yeah. And it's a fork of Synergy from when they were still open source. So whatever version that was, like 1.2, I think, or 1.4. The one that was still available in the repos, last I checked.
So it was Barrier? Was there another? Oh, look, Barrier's in the
repos.
In the Ubuntu repo, yeah. Was there? You say there's a second one too?
No, they're actually the same one, but it's by Debauche.
So it's version 2.1.2 plus DFSG-1, whatever DFSG, I don't know what that is. Oh, wait, what a... Ugh. So I don't see it in Ubuntu. Not Ubuntu, in Fedora.
Well, yeah, okay.
I'm surprised because I do have the RPM Fusion repos enabled. Let me see if they have Synergy. Yeah, what? Yeah, Synergy's in there. But not Barrier yet.
They got a snap or something?
Well, nope. I guess fuck that shit, because it ain't going to work for me, because Fedora's using Wayland.
yeah, your SOL.
So I'd have to build Barrier from source, I guess, if I wanted to use it, or try and find an RPM for it. But you know what? I know what kind of hell that, if you just start installing random RPMs.
Right.
That's not a good idea. I'm enjoying my Fedora system. I don't want to ruin it. Not yet. Because I think if I ruin it, I'm going to go back to Slack for a while.
Is there a Flatpak for it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm seeing a Flatpak.
It must be in so there's a, I thought Flatpaks were kind of, repos were kind of unified.
I don't know.
So building a Flatpak, Barrier Flatpak package. Wait, where did you see the Flatpak? Just on the GitHub?
That's the one I saw. No, but building the Flatpak.
Oh, you have to
and
build.
Then, well, Barrier Flatpak brought up a lot of responses, which is why I assumed that there was a Flatpak for it.
Oh, wait. Oh, so in order to use it, so there's FlatHub. Is FlatHub.org respectable? I don't know. I guess so. I don't know.
I haven't installed very many flat packs. I think I did it once a tenth test, but I can't even remember the application that I installed.
I don't know why I have, like, reservations about
one packaging system versus another.
Well, I mean, there is that. I mean, I'll save it for the show. So actually, I mean, I have some content, but this is decent content for the show, Joe.
Well, usually we tack this on anyway. We just waited until after you started recording to talk about it.
Yeah, I know, but it's like at the end, after like everybody's given up on what Joel has and his 3D printing, and then you know, we got this stuff in the beginning.
Oh, we've tried to nip that in the bud before, and he just plows on through with the 3D printing.
You just, you know, don't.
Hey, Minix.
You can try.
Hello.
Hey, you could try all you want, Joe. He's going to plow on through. When he's got something to say, you're going to hear it.
Yeah. For hours.
I miss the old days of CPAP chat.
What was that show called?
CPAP Weekly.
Yeah, okay, CPAP Weekly. That's, you know what, that's all we got to ask him, if he's built himself a CPAP hoser mask. Yeah,
how about it? Yeah, 3D printer. Yeah, exactly.
has he done the flexible materials?
You would think.
I don't know. We'll find out when he hops in. Thanks a lot, Minix.
The best of both worlds, man.
There you go.
Complete the circle.
It's just got to be powered by an Android computer. Dun, dun, dun. All right. Enough waiting for these yahoos. Let's blow this show out. This is episode 817. Right? No, I don't want to. Yeah, so 816.